Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. We're going to take a look at the phenomena of science betraying truth, or corporatizing science, privatizing science, and profiteering of science. Not all scientists, but certainly when those scientists had an opportunity to look for the truth when it came to the pandemic of AIDS, they looked in the opposite direction. Now the very same leaders, like Anthony Fauci, are running everything when it comes to COVID, and they've surrounded themselves with groups of scientists for hire, physicians who will be propagandists, news media who are supplicants to this entire drama. Who better to unpack this for us and to expose the truth than Celia Farber? Celia is a multi-award-winning investigative journalist who has been published in Harper's, Esquire, Rolling Stone, Spin, and many other publications. And since 1987, she has covered the HIV-AIDS controversy extensively. Many of these writings are collected in her book, Serious Adverse Events, An Uncensored History of AIDS, published by Random House. Activist Michael Callan called Farber, quote, the best AIDS journalist in the world. Her 2006 article for Harper's Magazine detailed the totalitarian corruption of HIV-AIDS research and was titled Out of Control, AIDS and the Corruption of Medical Science. The attacks from the AIDS industry were predictable and fierce. In 2008, she was awarded the Semmelweis Clean Hands Award for Outstanding Investigative Journalism. Her website is celiafarber.com or Substack. She's on Substack. That's CELIAFARBER, celiafarber.com. Nice to have you with us today, Celia.
Great to be with you, Gary.
Celia, let's paint the large picture, because a lot of times we'll have someone specializing, like Lynn Gannett, who did a major job of showing the corruption in the AZT trials. But that was her specialty. John Lawrenson wrote a book on it. That was his specialty. But you are different in that you have been into almost every single nick and cranny, every corner of the AIDS establishment. You've seen the truth. You've seen real science. You've seen real activists and real journalism. And then you've seen corrupted science and journalism. So for those who are not familiar with how bad the war on AIDS was and still is, and the person who headed that war, Anthony Fauci, give your overview on all of these different discrepancies between what the media told us was true versus the actual truth, and the documentation is overwhelming to support this. And then, after that, we're going to bring it up to date with COVID, and the same Anthony Fauci is mismanaging and misguiding the COVID pandemic response. The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. This was my first story starting out in journalism, and so I have been into every nook and cranny, and it's really only after they launched the COVID operation that I got into the center of the labyrinth and was finally able to see why AIDS happened the way it did, why everything was so crazy. But as you know, Gary, there was a cadre of us in many countries around the world, but we were not many. Our opposition to the HIV-AIDS beast was limited to those of us who saw it and were fighting it. It wasn't something that most people, mainstream people, cared about or could understand. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Even though they had been assaulted with the first psychological warfare bomb and this lasted many generations, which was the bomb that Bob Gallo, Anthony Fauci, the entire HHS apparatus, the entire media apparatus put out and inflicted with relentless propaganda for decades, which was being intimate with another person can kill you. Now, let's go back a little bit. people today don't think you can, quote unquote, catch HIV, you know, from a toilet seat and so forth. But in the very beginning, I'm sure you remember this, they were using the insane infectious, fake infectious epidemiological propositions for AIDS that they're using for COVID. So if only we could pull a magic cord and bring people back and say, do you remember when this man, Tony Fauci, told America, so did the Surgeon General, so did Oprah Winfrey, that you could catch HIV. I'm making quotation marks in the air over here, that you could catch HIV from a toilet seat, from a salad leaf, you know, somebody in a kitchen somewhere was Haitian and cut his hand on a knife and the blood, it was totally unfounded, totally insane, and none of it was borne out. But when they were wrong again and again and again, and none of their fear-mongering bore any relation to observable reality, and an interesting thing happened. They just went up, 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 more money, more money. They just kept swelling and swelling like this airship, right? They get bigger and bigger. They get more and more influence. They get more kind of revered. Now they have an international church, you might say, an international faith of HIV/AIDS. And that faith, similar to COVID, the root, the spirit core of it is fear, terror, fear of other people, fear of touch. You're basically about to drop dead, but for the pharmaceutical biotech industry and its poisons. Now it's vaccines, then it was poisonous pills. It's breathtaking that these, I can't call them scam artists. They are something much worse. I mean, it's murder, it's racketeering, it's psychological warfare. These are very, very dangerous ideas and very dangerous people. And I feel, as I imagine you do as well, on the one hand, there's despair that we didn't manage to crush this thing in its inception as hard as we tried, and it lived on, and now look where we are. And this thing, what I'm calling this thing that we tried to crush in its inception, is essentially spectral, completely non-foundational science. There's no classical science in any of this. You don't have to prove anything. All you have to do is launch it through your global media apparatus, and it has to fit with globalist, politically correct ideology. It has to fit precisely with that. And then you'll notice that the more politically correct a person is, I know there's more updated words for that, like woke. This is something not a lot of people talk about. They talk about profit. They talk about bad science and lies and all the things that we're really familiar with. But there's a spirit. There's a spirit body behind this thing. What is the spirit behind COVID? What is the spirit behind HIV/AIDS? Well, they're extremely malignant in both cases. But it's actually this spirit that comes in when extreme political correctness comes into Western culture, because political correctness is the enemy of verifiable truth. It's the enemy of proof or truth or justice, or it's just point the finger, you know, like the crucible, like the witch trials. You point the finger, you make the accusation, you spread the terror, and whatever you say goes. Now, Fauci had help with this this whole psychic operation being launched and kept in place, and there's a reason people did not oppose it, and the reason was terror, blind, raw terror. The activists ACT UP that were weaponized by what happened, the merger, was that Anthony Fauci was at first fiercely opposed by the Larry Kramer activist gang for not, quote, caring about AIDS, for not doing enough to fight AIDS, not giving it enough money, and not cranking out what they immediately called life-saving drugs, which is interesting. In other words, the activists, who were no doubt funded by all kinds of nefarious forces, were demanding medications for AIDS that they were already branding as life-saving, and they flipped the whole FDA drug approval architecture around so that now it was murder to test a drug for either safety or efficacy, which takes time. So they conflated that with their murder. You know, Tony Fauci and his ilk are murdering gay men. That didn't last very long. Anthony Fauci invited them into the halls of power, brought the activists in. They could sit in on meetings, and they, in many cases, knew more about all these the esoterica around these medications than the people at the NIH did. So once he did that, number one, the power went to their heads, and he had them. He's extremely Machiavellian. He had them in his back pocket, and so now they were doing a lot. They could do. They were like the hitmen. They were like the Gestapo forces, who would go and terrorize, whether it was cardinals who were had you know blood and condoms thrown at them, whether they were storming you or me or maybe Cosmo magazine for that Robert Gould article about heterosexual AIDS is a myth, which it was. So now he's actually set up a world in which the press is has taken hostage by these terroristic forces in the activist community who dictate chapter and verse what anybody can say or not say, print or not print, about HIV/AIDS. And as we know, that did not include interviews with Peter Duesberg or Carrie Mullis or Lynn Margulis or Richard Stroman or any number of the luminous scientists. And there are hundreds of them. In fact, I intend to create a master list for every scientist, epidemiologist, mathematician, professor, journalist who opposed this. I think that's very important to have that in the historical record. But they really perfected the art of weaponizing, let's say, natural scientific dialectic. Today, the people who are against truth will say, I believe in science or follow the science. You know, there are these phrases. And Fauci, insanely, about a week ago, said if you're against me, you're against science. Science is attacking science. That's the nature of science. It's supposed to be questioned, kicked, attacked, challenged from every possible direction to make it roadworthy. So over a period of about 30 years, all of these forces together have created essentially totalitarian science. And what that means is whatever they launch, and the PSYOP of COVID is different from the PSYOP of AIDS in that it's actually a very weird one. It's very weak, and you could just sort of kick it lightly and it falls apart because it starts with a pneumonia, a cluster of pneumonias in Wuhan, China. And pneumonia is not infectious. Pneumonia is acquired by environmental stressors. Then when it lands, you can see very quickly that the PSYOP apparatus has built everything in, and somehow they know so much about basic human psyche that it flies. It flies for most people around the world. Apparently still believed that despite everything that didn't pan out with HIV/AIDS, they still believed there were viruses hanging around. You could press an elevator button and catch it and fall over dead. I mean, this is just, it's beyond crazy. It's some kind of witchcraft. And so how do we counter it? Well, number one, the most important thing is is to understand that fear is their weapon, their number one weapon. I think the COVID PSYOP is way more dangerous than the HIV PSYOP because, as Tom DiFerdinando pointed out, and I know you're having him on, and you'll explain to your listeners exactly who he is. But he's done a lot of research into Wilhelm Reich's work. And Wilhelm Reich always said that the way they want to take people out, that what keeps a human being happy and functioning is work and love. So Tom says with AIDS, they knocked out love, and with COVID, they knocked out work. So I'm just going to pause and see if you want to pick up from there and maybe steer me in one direction or the other, because that was a lot.
Yes. No, you did great. I thank you for that introduction. There are three areas when it comes to COVID that are being challenged by orthodox scientists, Nobel laureates, tens of thousands of them, almost 100,000 all told now. These are orthodox, pro-vaccine, pro-science people who have said, Fauci, on this issue, you got it wrong. And the four areas that Fauci got it wrong and the U.S. Health agencies got it wrong are the total number of deaths, the mortality rate in the United States and other countries, the safety of the vaccine, it's safe and effective, 95% safe, and now we're seeing that 6,000-plus Americans have died by their count, by the Vaccine Adverse Reporting System, plus over another 12,000 have either been hospitalized or permanently disabled. So you're looking at almost 20,000 people who are really suffering, and that does not include the hundreds of thousands in the United States that are probably in the millions who have sustained some form of injury. But with and then the test itself, the PCR test, and then don't take any medications unless we invent them for you, like ivermectin don't take, hydroxychloroquine don't take, and also there's nothing you can do. So don't get yourself healthy. Don't work on your immune system. We haven't sanctioned any of that. Now go back to AIDS. There was no effort by the orthodoxy to have an accurate test. The test was a fraud. I want you to talk about that. Also, the drugs they were giving were toxic, AZT and other DDI, DDC, protease inhibitors. And yet when the evidence was there from the Concord study and other studies that more people were dying because of the treatment than from HIV and AIDS, they didn't allow that discussion to happen anywhere. It was full steam. And then also they lied about how easily the infectivity would be, that everybody, if you were virgin, if you were a nun in a monastery in Montana and you never went outside, you were equally susceptible. And I was thinking at the time, what is the proof of this? And of course, I worked with 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS, and not a single one died, and they all recovered. So I was at the opposite end of that argument, challenging them on theirs. So very similar to what we saw with AIDS, we're now seeing the same playbook used with COVID. So take us through the discrepancies of actual science and the consequences to people's health from the biggest mistakes that Fauci and Gallo made.
Sure, yeah. The first battle that you and I and our fellow HIV dissenters fought, the first real formidable battle was over AZT. AZT was one of the great catastrophic chapters, certainly of American medicine, Western medicine. The estimate of how many people, mostly gay men, perished from AZT directly is upward of 300,000. It was pulled off the shelf at what was then Burroughs Wellcome, today GlaxoSmithKline, as it was an old chemotherapeutic agent lying around. I think it was called Compound S, and it was considered too toxic for human use in 1960, I believe was the year. So that's very toxic. It was, in other words, it was chemotherapy. It was and is chemotherapy, which means chemically the mass obliteration of cells, of all cells, white cells. What are the cells that are missing in AIDS patients? White cells. Why would you give people a drug that's going to wipe out their white cell. The whole thing was exactly inverted. It wasn't just ill-informed. It was inverted. It was total insanity. Once again, just like with COVID, they had mastered the dark art of through the media and through these images projected through the media, getting people so spellbound by fear of the virus. They're very good at weaponizing, demonizing, and charging these viruses in quotes, with these powers that are never proven, that are never shown, that people aren't really experiencing. But again and again, they succeed, and people get so frightened, and then the mindset takes over. Anything to fight the virus, including swallowing chemotherapy to the point where people were turning green, they were vomiting, in some cases parts of their faces were atrophying, like people do in, you know, Chernobyl type situations. It was
so the
like
camelback too.
What's that?
The camelback.
Oh yes. Okay, so that came a little later. Yes, exactly. So the next big chapter. So you mentioned the Concord study, which was a big moment when we all believed, oh, the Berlin Wall has come down and now we're going to have sanity, because AZT fell when the Concord study came out showing, Ian Weller's study in the UK, showing that people died much faster when they took AZT, that AZT was deadly. What they did there, and this is where I have to circle back to Fauci, he's absolutely masterful as a psyop manager, a psychological operations manager, and turning every failure, disaster, and crime into something that still casts warm, glowing light on him and his whole ilk, right? So with AZT, instead of them all being fired, if not tried for crimes against humanity, which I hope will happen now, instead they went straight into the new psychological operation, which was, now we've gotten away with this old, primitive FDA drug approval process that was weighing us all down. And now we've all seen the light, and now we can approve drugs for HIV in between 2 and 6 weeks. So now there's this pipeline, and all these drugs are coming out, and all these the gay organizations and magazines are fetishizing these drugs and the culture of drugs into bodies, more drugs. So he had them, you know, we remember he got them in his pocket a long time ago, and they created this cult of chemical worship and hatred of any discussion of what is a body, what is an immune system, what is health, everything you've devoted your life to. They hated that. They saw that as, just woo and dangerous. So they never thought AZT was dangerous, but they thought, you know, carrot juice was dangerous. We're talking about it. So, you know, how do you deal with something like this? So the next thing that happens is that Andrew Sullivan writes his cover story in New York Magazine that AIDS is over because protease inhibitors, so-called cocktail therapy, has ended the epidemic. And he's out in Fire Island, and people aren't dying anymore. There are no more funerals. So this was, now they went from what they called monotherapy to what they called cocktail therapy. Many, countless drugs in countless combinations, countless media articles claiming, they called it the Lazarus effect, that these guys were being raised from the dead. And so the history of AZT is quickly washed away in this euphoria about cocktail therapy and AIDS is over and everyone's rising from the dead. That's where those buffalo humps you just mentioned come in. Because proteases run all through the body, and I know you've interviewed Dr. David Rasnick, who speaks to this. The fat protease systems got all got messed up by these drugs, and so people's fat cells would migrate. In men, it was very often to the back of their necks, sometimes their bellies. A drug called Crixivan that was called Crixibelly. See, they always made it kind of cute, had all these phrases ready to go. Buffalo humps was the name for the humps on the back of the neck. Women would get painfully, gigantically engorged breasts. And also the fat would be removed from, like, their legs and arms. So they would have these skinny legs and arms. The fat would drain from their faces. This all gave rise to a sub-industry, a new industry, which was plastic surgeons devoting themselves to making gay men look as good as possible, again, by removing all these humps. And it just couldn't make it up, right? It was unbelievable. So then that era led into PrEP. I was done by the time PrEP happened. PrEP means every gay man who wants to have sex in this world takes a chemical that is said to be, by the Oracle, Fauci, prevention from ever getting infected with HIV. So essentially this is where the AIDS war, you know, after they did all of their crushing, all their warfare against all of us, you know, they declare victory with PrEP. And then there's a lull for a couple of years. And then COVID comes in. But COVID hits the culture when Fauci is still at the helm. An average person has not been made privy to the fact of how every pronouncement this man made since 1984 was wrong, disastrously wrong, murderously wrong. You know, his predecessor, whose name escapes me right now, but Tony Fauci's predecessor said he served two terms. I guess that's two times 4 years as the head of the NIH. And he said nobody should serve longer than that. It's just not right. And he left. He was honest about the people who died from the swine flu vaccine. I wish I could remember his name. So Anthony Fauci seems to be untouchable, unfireable, no matter what he does. It's really a phenomenon. It's like America's first dictator, bona fide dictator. Now, okay, so I could continue about what you asked about. Shall I continue about COVID and what you brought up about?
One more thing.
Yeah.
Talk about the tests, because yes. Back then, everybody was told to get an HIV test. I had to get one every year for insurance reasons, and I was always negative. But I thought, what if you have a cofactor? Let's say you have leprosy or malaria in Africa, or schistosomiasis, river blindness. You will test positive. In the United States, if you had herpes, hepatitis, you will test positive, and nobody was being told this. Christine Johnson found this out and published several articles on it, but everybody swore by the HIV test. Tell us about the test.
Yes, the test was how they did all the evil that they did. Bob Gallo patented the first ELISA test. I'm pretty sure it was the day after the dark historic announcement in April 1984 that the U.S. government had found the probable cause of AIDS, and that it was in his lab, HTLV-3, later renamed HIV. The so-called HIV test was no more a test for a pathogen called HIV, a whole pathogen, than the COVID PCR test is a test for COVID. The word test makes everybody think it's a test. The word test makes everybody think they can win or lose. They can succeed or fail. It's thumbs up, thumbs down, very binary. There were several HIV tests. There was ELISA Western Blot was where it all began. And both of them are antibody tests. Gallo and Fauci and all these guys, they just started a whole new dark chapter in medicine whereby it's called surrogate marker testing, where the test does not test for the thing in itself, but rather, you might say, footprints of the thing in itself. So in the case of the HIV test, they built it around proteins that were said to be unique to HIV. And as you pointed out, they were not unique Now, when I say HIV, quotation marks, what was HIV? That's another show. That's another conversation. But it was different from lab to lab. In a lab in the United States, you needed, let's say, 3 or 4 proteins for them to call you and say, I have bad news, it's positive. In Australia, you needed 5, very hard to test positive in Australia. In Africa, you only needed 2, very easy to test positive in Africa. And in the United States, it differed from lab to lab, a Red Cross lab, an FDA lab. We see this chaos. There's no standard. There's no gold standard for the accused so-called pathogen itself, never mind for the... There's no gold standard for what actually means you have it. Like, let's compare it to a pregnancy test. There's a gold standard. A pregnancy test is not right most of the time. It's a well-built test that tests for a certain hormone excreted when a woman is pregnant. And if she's pregnant, it's going to light up positive. That's a test. What these criminals did was they created abstracted tests that first comes the terror, then comes the you must get tested all the time. And what this brings in is a very dangerous big psychic, let's call it, cloud. A big psychic cloud comes in, which is this, which pertains exactly to COVID. We tell you that you are never free, in the clear, healthy, no matter how healthy you feel. Rather, you must go get checked. You must go get a test all the time. So you're living in chronic anxiety. You have to go get this test. And if you test negative, you can breathe a sigh of relief. But you're still not out of what I call debt. It's like the first debt-based medical lie, just like the banking system likes to put us in debt and keep us in debt. It's got those dark elements to it, interest and usury. You can't get out of debt, because no longer do we look at a person and say, He feels fine. He looks fine. He's fine. He doesn't need to worry until he gets sick. With AIDS, they put it all into everybody is potentially sick, and you are also supposed to believe that and adopt that as the right way to be a good liberal, the right way to be a good, HIV red ribbon person, was to say, oh, I'm not necessarily healthy. We all have, you remember when Gallo said, we all have AIDS. So you were supposed to walk around thinking that I need to get tested all the time, and it's everybody's disease, and all these fashion designers and all these, this whole tidal wave of exploitive and manipulative corporate parasites that descend upon us, telling us we have to do this and that and bicycle and march and buy certain clothes and wear all these things. And, this is cult stuff. So that was AIDS. And then when none of it happened, when heterosexual, it was supposed to be a big, gigantic explosion. That was the word, explosion of heterosexual AIDS, because we were guilty, as heterosexuals, we were guilty of not having gotten sick yet. And we weren't supposed to think that this disease was unique to fast lane gay men in bathhouse cultures. What happened was we were supposed to believe that it was exactly the same. It was just Russian roulette. You're just one broken condom away from catching it. So this in turn taps into infectious germ theory in general, which is really the specter, the dark specter hanging over all of this that we really must deal with. Does a single organism, like Tom Cowan and others, are really really working very hard on right now, that discussion, that historical discussion, does any single microorganism ever cause a really bad complex disease? Or are diseases, as all the evidence points to, virtually without exception, toxicological, environmental, psychological, spiritual, emotional, but especially rooted in toxic assault of different kinds, and electromagnetic assault? And all the evidence for COVID points exactly to the same thing, that the people who got what we call it, and I know there's some people who say there is no it, you know, I'm still looking at all sides, but let's say that there was a coherent illness based on hypoxia and the difficulty breathing and so forth, and everybody who suffered they had comorbidities, including obesity, diabetes. They all had comorbidities. They were I think in most cases generally over 80 years old. You weren't allowed to say that either. We all, once again, here we go. You know, it's the same. This is why it's so important to look at the PSYOP factory that puts the ideas into the culture, through the media, into our heads, so we can't see reality anymore. It's like guilt trips as witchcraft. We're supposed to feel so guilty. Yes.
For those of you who just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. Celia Farber, multi-award-winning investigative journalist, is on the line. We're talking about the similarities between the war on AIDS, the war on COVID, Anthony Fauci, and many of the scientists who were part of that were in both. Now, one thing that no one in the scientific community has known is that when the National Cancer Institute, where Gallo worked, and the head of his lab, Gallo was over, I believe, at the Institute of Pasteur trying to get them on board with his antibody test. The head of his laboratory was working on the virus that later would be called HIV, but he finished a report that was to be sent to Science magazine to be published, and it did not show a unique virus. I've read the report. I read the original letter because Janine Roberts, one of the greatest investigative journalists in the history, who did blood diamonds and all these other great investigations, she went to the relative's house of the man. What was his name? Popovic?
Popovic.
And she found the original manuscript. And when Gallo came back, he changed it. You want to pick it up from there?
I'm holding her book. And I'm wondering if I can find the right page. I won't hold us up. But in Janine Roberts' book, which is everybody should read who's interested in this, Fear of the Invisible. I totally agree with your assessment of her work. Fear of the Invisible, Janine Roberts. How scared should we be of viruses and vaccines, HIV and AIDS? In this book, are actually the lab notes from Gallo's lab where the blood was taken from the original cohort of gay men, and the Dr. Popovic, who was nicknamed, I think, Mika, is how Gallo refers to him in the margins of these notes, it fell upon him to look for a retrovirus or retroviruses. Now, let me just say this about that. There was a generation of retrovirologists waiting in the wings for a retrovirus to be significant, i.e. deadly and dangerous, and there hadn't been one. So there was this industry waiting, you know, a push to make some terrible disease be linked to a retrovirus. Okay, I actually found the page. Now, what happened here was Popovic looked for retroviruses in that blood sample, and he did not find it. I'm going to read from his notes. Popovic wrote, Okay, sorry about that, everybody. False alarm. I didn't actually have the right section of the book, so I'm just gonna sum it up from memory. That Popovic concluded there's no retrovirus in this. There's no retroviral activity. There's no budding retrovirus. There's no HTLV-3. None of the things that Gallo was essentially asking him to find in this blood. Gallo wasn't there at the time. Gallo comes back sees these notes and writes furiously in the margin, "Mika, are you crazy?" and simply crosses it out and reverses the conclusion. And that goes into the foundation, the four foundation papers published in Science that became the bedrock for all of HIV/AIDS research, unbelievably.
Also, what Popovic did is he got the top the number one person at the National Cancer Institute who would look under an electron microscope to see if there was a virus there. And he wrote that he could not find any. That's also part of what was in that original manuscript.
And let me ask you, Gary, are you aware of the work that was done by OMSJ and their legal team and their military HIV cases before they were destroyed and taken out of business? This is relatively recent, around the year from about 2010 until about 2016, perhaps, they were operating. Are you aware of what they found?
No.
Okay, you'll be very interested in this. OMSJ, the acronym is the Office for Medical and Scientific Justice. It was led by a private investigator, former LAPD police officer named Clark Baker. Clark Baker was in charge of investigating myself and Peter Duisberg when we got the Semmelweis Award that you mentioned in your introduction in 2008, because the activist descended and went ballistic and threatened to destroy the organization. So they said, okay, we're gonna investigate whether these two people are for real. So Clark Baker wound up down rabbit holes none of us even knew existed, and he eventually established a legal 501c3 called OMSJ, and they got connected to lawyers and scientists, and they started taking on cases of military men who were said to be HIV positive. You know, it's called having HIV, but it just means you got an HIV positive test. And if they had sexual relations but did not demonstrably alert the other person that they're HIV positive, that is actually a crime punishable by lengthy prison sentence. So in virtually all states. They don't apply it everywhere, it's interesting, but they were applying it in the military. So there were pretty high-ranking military officers, not officers, what's the word? Well, men of the military, okay, who were, and I don't know if it was political inside the military or what was behind it, but they were getting these accusations, which then they could not defend because they couldn't prove that they had let the other person know they were HIV. So they were languishing in prisons in many cases. OMSJ turned up and said, we would like to represent you and defend you and protect you. And the way they did that, they got their blood and they sent it off to electron microscopy labs, or starting with an electron microscopy lab, and asked the lab technician, please test this blood for, and they listed maybe 30 so-called pathogens, including HIV, to not draw too much attention to what they were doing. And in each instance, it came back no HIV on electron microscopy. So we have to ask ourselves, why did these dark wizards never want to do anything the old-fashioned way? Everything is surrogate marker testing, ELISA, Western blot, antibody tests, and now, God forbid, PCR tests. That's the whole way they do it. That's the whole trick. Because if you look for the virus in itself under a real microscope, it's not there. So they wound up in, I think it's 54 cases before they were shut down. They found in 100% of cases that those who were HIV positive were in prison or were about to go to prison, did not have HIV in their blood by the highest standard of microscopy. True story. They got 54 of them out of prison. When the deep state Fauci-led apparatus caught on to what they were doing. They threatened their go-to lab technician. They said they would destroy his career. He had a sick wife, so he told them, I can't keep doing this testing for you all. So they went to other labs, and lo and behold, word had gone out from the top of the empire that nobody may test any blood for HIV at any electron microscopy lab in the country. So you can't get it done now. There's no lab. And if they didn't do it, that the NIH was going to withdraw all funding, which was considerable. And this is what Fauci's a master at. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. speaks to this a lot, how Fauci, over many, many years, created the perfect controllable totalitarian system by funding everybody and pulling that funding if they ever stepped one iota out of line. He does it. He did it with HIV, and he does it with COVID. But COVID, as you said, we're in a much more hopeful place because COVID is so bad and atrocious and outrageous and preposterous and murderous that many, many, many are now screaming bloody murder about it. It's not like this. It's not such an anguished decision as it used to be in the HIV days.
We only have 10 minutes left, 9 minutes left. Let's go through COVID today and see what Fauci is doing that, based upon real science from outstanding scientists and the challenges they're giving to Fauci, and how Fauci now, for the first time in 30-plus years, is on the defensive.
Yeah, it's very interesting. When, as we know, you know, when a dictator begins to lose, when he loses any level of blind obsequious worship, he's in a lot of trouble. Ever since Rand Paul confronted Anthony Fauci about the Wuhan funding to gain of function research, there was a really deep sense that that there was a crack in the facade, and the first way we saw that was how incredibly rattled and angry Fauci was in that exchange, and his whole thing is being smooth and the Sphinx and the Oracle and smooth, never gets rattled. So when I saw that, I thought, wow, something's really going on here. Then the emails came out, and mainstream media, even on the left, we even have comedians like what Jon Stewart, his bit on Colbert, I don't know if you saw that. It spread really fast to all around the circle, all political spheres, where people said, wait a minute, he did what? And it's difficult for people because they've in most cases taken the shots based on Fauci's oracular powers, and now I think average person doesn't necessarily want to say it, but I think there's virtually no more Fauci worship out there. There are people who are paid to hold the line, but people are either quiet about him or they've really woken up and they really see him. I think he's in a lot of trouble, and I think his reign is over, but the devastation of this thing is so advanced that I try to imagine how they're going to, you know, as I said earlier, when they wanted to pivot and shapeshift out of the AZT disastrous mass murder, they found a way to do it by re-psyoping all the gay men that we've saved you, we've given you all these drugs, it's Christmas, here are all your drugs, you know, so that worked. How are they going to get out of this one? They can't admit that Anthony Fauci is corrupt, or they couldn't do it on the science. They might be able to do it on the China angle. And it really also gives us all insight into just how deeply dangerous and depraved this man is, really, really threatening threatening this country? Is he, you know, who is he? Where is he coming from?
Well, we know who the sycophants are because he appeared on all the network shows within a couple of days, and they just embraced him. So they have their talking points. Protect Fauci, attacked his detractors, but now there's dissent from every part of the scientific community, and it's gaining. I mean, you go after a lot of these ultra-Orthodox doctors who are pro-vaccine, and they start being lied to, and their evidence is supportive that the virus vaccines is shedding, and that this moves out of the deltoid muscle in the arm to go throughout the body and can cause heart disease and brain conditions, and that it makes children extremely susceptible, and they're not susceptible normally. And suddenly people begin to see the naked, absolute perversion and profiteering of giving the vaccine without looking at the actual science, and the actual scientists who created that science are now saying these children shouldn't be vaccinated. Even the World Health Organization made a similar comment. So he's in a fallback position. But going back to Fauci and Gallo, a large group, a number of scientists who looked at the original Popovic manuscript and then how Gallo changed it, wrote a letter that they all were signatories saying this so-called scientific discovery of Gallo's is not accurate. It's incorrect. You should retract this article. They never heard back from Science Magazine.
Wow. Right. Exactly. No, they were, the journals are into it up to their eyeballs, all of them. The whole thing, as you're well aware, Gary, is a long since bought and paid for total apparatus of total, where all the, every result from everything goes the way pharma needs it to go, because they pay for the ghost writers at the journals, they pay the journal. It's just a wash in money. The media, the television stations, the universities. There's no part of the society where they have not flooded with their dark money, and that gave them they cut a good run for their money. But I think they're at the end of that run now, because this is too much. And people's grandmothers and grandfathers and aunts and uncles and so-called, you know, ordinary Americans who never paid attention to any of this are living through this bizarre carnage and horror. And it's literally incomprehensible.
Real quick, we are coming up to the end. Didn't you just write an article showing that in one country, the fatalities from COVID were extremely exaggerated?
Yes, precisely right. The country was Portugal. Anybody can go to my Substack. I'll describe what it is real quick. My Substack address is celiafarber.substack.com. It was an anonymous team filed suit to a FOIA request from the Ministry of Health in Portugal to find out why they called 17,000 deaths COVID deaths. Came out the real number was 152. So that's how much they had exaggerated. In other words, when they demanded proof of cause of death and autopsy results and whatever they could find. Now, there's one PhD, a background in lung pathology and epidemiology and statistics, who was willing to put his name on this fight, and his name is Andre Diaz. So that's who I interviewed on my Substack, and he said when they brought it to the court, and the court had to admit that these petitioners were correct. They have nothing. They have no. This is literally hallucinated. What shall we call it? It can't be science if it's hallucinated. It's just a total projection. They make it up out of whole cloth. They send
Again,
it down through the media. That's it. End of story.
How many people did they claim, and how many actual COVID deaths?
They claimed 17,000. Actual number was 152.
More than a slight error. Celia Farber, thank you very much for being on. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary. Always great to talk to you.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening in. Have a nice day.